As you probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code The Athletic. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
In a world of uncertainty, one thing is for sure. Cancer doesn't stop during a global crisis. On Saturday, June 13th, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society will host a trailblazing event, Big Virtual Climb, sponsored by AbbVie, to support their investment in groundbreaking research to advance blood cancer cures and its first-in-class patient education and services, including financial support and clinical trial navigation. Step up to take cancer down by climbing 61 floors or 1,762 steps, inside or outside, on stairs, on the road, on your treadmill, climb your way. Join us for an opening ceremony and then take on your climb with our heart-pumping playlist. Join us on June 13th from coast to coast as we come together to climb, conquer, and cure. Register at lls.org/bigclimb.
Everybody, welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by The Athletic. I am Marc-Antoine Godin, and on this beautiful, sunny May 29th, or Friday, I am joined by Harpin Basu, as usual. Hi, Harpin, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm hot.
You're hot.
That's how I'm doing. I'm hot.
That's good.
I'm hot. I wanted to have a fan on for the podcast, and I wasn't allowed, and I'm upset.
Denied. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, too loud.
I still wonder how we managed to get from snowy Montreal to a heat wave in a span of 2 weeks. These sort of things.
Not only that, but by Sunday, if the weather reports are accurate, by Sunday we should have a high of 13 degrees.
Okay.
It's currently 29. In 2 days, apparently the high will be 13 degrees.
Well,
wrap your head around that. I mean, that just anyhow, whatever.
That's good. Well, this weather report was brought to you by The Athletic. Listen, Harpin, things are heating up hockey wise.
Your number one source for weather news.
Yeah, that's. So things are heating up on the hockey side. There are prospects of going back to play sometime, maybe in late July, early August. We've heard that teams would be training camps would not start prior to July 10th, but there are many things to sort out, many things to attach until this can be done. From the players' point of view, there are legitimate concerns that still have not been resolved, and I think that that Paul Byron and Brendan Gallagher in their conference call on Thursday really illustrated that well. So I'd like to have your thoughts, since you were on that call. I'd like to have your thoughts on what struck you the most on what they said and what seemed to you probably like the predominant concern at this point for the players.
Well, the predominant concern is logistics and details and the sheer amount of them. I mean, at one point, you know, Paul Byron, you know, talking about some of the things that they need to still negotiate and some of the some of the conditions that they need to secure to feel safe. You know, he says when you start looking at all the details, it starts to seem a little daunting. And that's, you know, I mean, it's not him that's going to have to deal with it. It's the return to play community, and primarily it's the NHLPA, because that's their job. But I mean, it just, you know, they were fielding all these questions on, will families be allowed in the hub cities? What happens if there's a positive test? You know, all these things relating to their safety and the risk that they're taking. There are tons and tons of details on how they can mitigate those risks and what the players will need and how much those needs will cost. And so and who's going to pay for them. And so there's all sorts of things going on that the players really need to figure out and that the league needs to figure out, and that it's great that we have this return to play format. But, in reality, we're so far from the finish line. That's the impression I got, at least, that the finish line is still very, very far away before we ever see, this format implemented.
Yeah. You know, that good old, saying, the devil is in the detail. Well, the devil has, we'll have a fun ride, in the next, few weeks to, you know, sort out those details. I think that you brought up the question of the families. I mean, I remember that it was a concern first raised by Philippe Danault a few weeks ago for a team that the thing is, when you leave for the hub city, the players won't know how long they're going to be away. They could be away only for a week because they would be part only of the play-in. They would get eliminated and then go back home. That's fine. But you know when you go, you don't know when you're going to come back. And I mean, for all those guys who've become new fathers or things like that, I mean, I understand it's part of the deal, and they're paid a hefty sum to have that sort of constraint in their lives. But it's uncharted territory to say, well, you're going to remain pretty much recluse in a bubble between an arena and a hotel for 2 months. If your team goes all the way. So it's, because there's going to be training camps too. Once they arrive in the hub city, there's going to be a period of practice. There are going to be the games themselves. Then the playoffs. It can take a long while. So I think it might not be as much of an issue for single guys, but as a parent, I can easily see how it can be a concern for the guys who have young children at home.
Yeah, and even within that, so I mean, you know, Byron mentioned that. He mentioned that the unknown of how long, there's so much unknown, and so one of the unknowns is you don't know how long you're going to be gone. But we are hockey players, this is what we're paid to do, and this is part of the deal. And I think most players accept that reality. But it's just like, you know, what happens if a player's wife is pregnant? You know, and the player wants to be there for the birth of his child? Or what happens if something happens at home? There's an accident, or someone gets sick, or someone, you know, one of their kids gets injured, he has a fall and has to go to the hospital. Like what happens? What happens? There's so many things. Like, what happens if? And that neither the players, nor do I think the league, have an answer for. And they're going to have to negotiate all these contingencies, all these conditions, life conditions that what happens if. They're going to have to ask that hundreds of times, I think, quite literally. Like, it's what happens if this happens? What happens if this happens? And they're going to need to go through and try and exhaust every single possibility and have an answer ready to go in the eventuality that something like that happens. And so when you start
thinking
about...
Sort of a contingency plan, basically.
Yeah, but when you start thinking about it in those terms and the sheer enormity of possible scenarios that could happen over a 2 month span, not to mention the evolution of the pandemic over that span. It's the task is monumental. Like, it's just huge. It's huge. And so it's great. And we're going to talk about the actual play-in round that the Canadiens are a part of. And, but it's great to talk about that stuff, but man, are we far? I get the impression, at least listening to Brendan and Paul talk on that call, that we're really far away from actually tangibly knowing if we're actually going to have this play-in series or not.
Yeah, and if all the players are involved in a vote, you could say, okay, well, are they going to vote on a bundle of compromises and measures that they've agreed on, or they'll have to vote on every single one of them to say, well, this one doesn't make sense, that one good, that one, yeah, okay. So it's going to be the 700 players will want to have a say and will need to have a say in what's agreed upon.
Well, I mean, yeah, like Byron said, you know, first of all, we don't know if there's going to be a full vote, but Byron said it's bound to happen. Devin Dubnyk, I think, told our colleague Michael Russo last week, that he also thinks that it's almost inevitable that a full NHLPA vote will happen. And this is the hard part, is that they're basically, what I imagine, I don't know how it's going to work, but I would imagine that at some point a document will be produced. That document will be sent to all the PA members. They will have a chance to read that document, and then they will have to vote on it. And so, if there are some things in the document they don't like, they're going to have to decide individually, okay, is there enough things in the document that I don't like for me to vote against it? Mm-hmm. Or can I live with the things I don't like because most of the things there kind of meet my needs and stuff? So it's going to be a tough vote. And especially for players with families, it's not just the player who's going to vote on it. It's going to be, the spouses and, you know, keeping the kids in mind and what have you. And so it's hard to say really, you know, Byron was surprised at how strong a majority of player reps voted in favor of the format, because that is almost an easier discussion. That's just talking hockey. This is like, what is fair from a hockey competitive standpoint? What is the most competitively fair thing we can do? And that's what they were agreeing on. And even though there were only two dissenting voices, there were probably some members of some teams who weren't fully on board with it, but the majority of that team said, okay, let's do it. And so then majority ruled, and so that vote turned into a yes vote. But we don't know how many players on each individual team didn't even like that. And that's the easy part. Like, that's really the relatively easy part, in the sense, like, that's just, okay, we've just played, you know, 80 or 85% of the season. What's the fairest way to go straight to a playoff, or to establish a playoff pool? So here's what we came up with. Do you agree or disagree? But individual players weren't given a right on that vote. I don't know. I think if individual players were given a right on that vote, I still think the majority would have probably gone with it, but we would definitely be more of a split. There would be definitely a different split, the 29-2.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe 70-30 or 75-25 or whatever it is, but there'd be more dissension. And with this, however, this isn't like hockey. This is life, you know, and this is life matters. And so there's so many varying opinions. I imagine there are people in the NHL who disagree with all the confinement rules. There's some people who think there should be more confinement rules. Like, even that, like, the opinions will probably vary greatly on how dangerous this actually is among players. Some probably think it's extremely dangerous and not worth it, while others might think that they're doing too much. They're overly concerned about this, and it's not that big of a deal. So I'd be really, if there is an internal NHLPA vote, I'd be fascinated to see the results of that and see how players actually feel about having to play under these conditions.
Yeah, as you said, the playoff format was the easy part, and it, because there was a number, there was a finite number of options and scenarios possible. So it was just, overall, at some point, they would agree on something that would send a signal as players, we want to resume play. We're ready to play. And the two teams that basically voted no, that were against the format, they came out a little bit as though they were not really willing to play. It did not make them look good. You know, I think of the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't think that it looked very good on them. And when I saw the video that was initiated by Alex Killorn with the guys on their jet skis and the bolt is back and whatnot, that viral video that the Lightning players made, I thought that it seemed as though a little bit of a PR move to try to say, you know, guys, no. Honestly, we're happy to go back to work, and don't get us wrong with our vote, you know. So, but that's the easy part. And when you get into the little entanglements of the lifestyle issue, then it's going to be a lot more complicated.
And I just want to say how wrong it was that the Lightning and the Hurricanes, and specifically Alex Killorn and Jordan Martinook, who are the player reps, you know, what a beating they took in the public sphere for their team's vote. I mean, they were just voting on a format. They were not in fact saying we don't want to play. They were saying we disagree with the format that's been presented to us. And it was interesting to hear Paul Byron say that that there was no other format ever brought to the table. You know, like basically the return to play committee, which has a number of players on it, a number of prominent players on it, should add. You know, Connor McDavid, John Tavares, there's some pretty important guys, like Mark Scheifele. I mean, there's some prominent James players Benjamin on there, and too. James Van Riemsdyk, and a couple more that escaped me. But in any case, so only that 2014 format was the only thing that was presented to the players. They're like, this is what we came up with. This is how it works. What do you think? And yeah, those guys, Martinuk and Killorn, you know, they had to come up and speak on behalf of their team, and defend their no vote and both of them were very, very clear in saying this is not a vote saying that we do not want to return to play. It's that we disagree with this format. And, you know, as usual, people took it wrong. And, you know, I don't know. I wonder sometimes if people would rather that players just don't explain themselves. Because both those guys spoke to the media and explained themselves, and got ripped for it. And then you sort of want, you know, you kind of start to understand why players don't really want to talk candidly anymore, because they wind up getting criticized for it.
Yeah, but it's a little bit like people listen to the answer, but they didn't read the question. You know, so you have to pay attention to the question to judge about the answer that's done. And in this case, yeah, it did not make them look good, but a lot of it was just the way it was spun in the media. Also, obviously Gallagher, Byron, very open. They're in line with what Marc Bergevin had said the day before. Overall, happy with the format, happy to be in the play. Of having a chance to be in the playoffs. I mean, the opposite would really have surprised me. So despite the fact that they're not able to finish the regular season, which I thought was a foregone conclusion a while back ago, it's for the players who wanted to resume their season, having a chance to salvage that season and redeem themselves. That's pretty much the best scenarios if you're a hockey Canadiens player.
Yes, exactly. And that's, you know, I think, you know, it was interesting, you know, Brendan Gallagher, you know, a few weeks ago when asked about his contract and what he's going to look for when he signs an extension, is he said, my number one priority is winning. And so I asked him during that call, I was kind of like, well, this is why I feel, you know, your answer back then is pertinent now, because now you're being presented with an opportunity to win immediately. However, that opportunity to win immediately could come at the expense of potentially hampering your ability to win on a more sustainable basis in the future. He immediately brushed that aside, and, you know, being a fifth round draft pick, probably doesn't see the value of the draft as much as other people do, and admitted as such. But, you know, said having a high draft pick is no guarantee of having a good player, whereas this is a guarantee of a legitimate, tangible opportunity to reach the playoffs, on our merit. And I believe in our group and this blah, blah, blah. And so it's still, you know, and I think, you know, we were talking after Marc Bergevin's press conference, how he looks at this whole scenario as a player more so than a manager. He looks at it the same way Brendan Gallagher does. Which is interesting. It's in the sense that, you know, he is a former NHL player and probably still thinks like one. But there is something to be said for being more or less locked in, with the eighth pick in this draft, where 9, maybe 10, maybe there's a tier that kind of drops off a little bit at 10. You know, they're in a pretty advantageous spot right now, and they could play themselves out of that spot. And I think that's, you know, that's a conversation that if you looked at it objectively is worth having.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I think that it's, you know, I know exactly on which side I stand on that issue. And I think that the Canadiens would be better served with having a higher draft pick than trying their way into a playoffs that conceivably they could not really, they don't have what it takes to make a big run. If they do, well, I'll be happy to be wrong on that. But I at the same time, I like to put myself in the player's shoes and understand that they're such competitors that any occasion they have to, you know, lace them up and see, okay, let's square off and see, let's see what we can do and compete. That's that crazy level of competitiveness that those guys have, where they basically shut down every parameter that they have from the outside, and the draft being one of them, only to focus on the task at hand and winning the next game. This ability to just focus on that and give it all they got for the sake of that competition is probably, this is probably what explains why they've become professional athletes. And me, well, I'm not apart from the physical ability and a couple of other things that would take many pages to list. But yeah, that's one thing. I think that the fact that they're going to be competitors to the nth degree. So I understand where they come from, where they basically, they brush that aside very quickly. And that's why I think when we talk about Marc Bergevin being a former player and having to basically decide, am I going to think like a former player? Am I going to think like a manager? It needs a conscious effort to put away the former player hat, put on the one of manager, because the priorities then don't necessarily become the same. And it's always been the case, because every time that the Canadiens, you know, we've been talking about teams tanking or just team narrowly missing the playoffs, and how finishing 17, so having the 15th pick last year, was probably the worst setup the Canadiens could have had. All those questions, they keep rising, but I think that it's even more prevalent this time around with the format that's being used, because the Canadiens just, they were not knocking at the doorstep of the playoffs. They were 24th in the league, which is an illusion to think that you're on the door of the playoff if you know you're 24th in the league, because realistically on any other year you're not. It just tells you that your team is not strong enough.
Exactly, and that certain moves need to be made, and honestly, their draft position doesn't prevent them from making moves. They could be, and you know, as you rightly pointed out in your piece this week, that there has to be a hope that Marc Bergevin would not let some sort of magical run in this tournament, you know, sort of cloud his evaluation of what happened this season. Because I think everyone recognizes, and I think this is why this debate is so pertinent, is that the Canadiens have the ability to go on a run here. Like, this is when healthy, this is a difficult opponent. They play a style that makes life miserable on teams, but they need to be healthy. They need to be a healthy team. And this season really demonstrated that, because, you know, the Canadiens, Claude Julien, even Marc Bergevin, they can talk about injuries. They always say it's not an excuse, it's just reality. Well, the reality is that you want to look at teams that suffered injury, like the Pittsburgh Penguins, for one, were decimated by injuries all season. They still had a great year. The Columbus Blue Jackets were decimated by injuries all year. I think they led the league by far in man games lost to injury. You know, and losing players like Seth Jones and like important guys, Cam Atkinson. Yeah. And they were still, you know, very strongly in a position to make the playoffs. And not only that, like that, this comes after losing Panarin and Duchesne and all the guys that they lost in the offseason to free agency. So it's all well and good for the Canadiens to say, oh, well, you know, we had injuries to key players. These weren't just bit players. They were key players. The entire season went south when they lost Jonathan Drouin, who at the time was a key player, fully admitted. Paul Byron, who at the time was a fourth line player struggling to find his game. And these two guys go and everything falls apart. It is a house of cards. And if one card goes out, the whole thing falls apart. But the fact is that if this play-in goes, if they do get to this stage where they're playing in the play-in against the Penguins, that house of cards will be built. They will have their house of cards. It will not be fallen on the ground. They will be healthy for the most part. And so they have a chance. And that's the thing, is that, you know, the scenario that keeps playing in my head is that the first overall pick is awarded to the bucket of eight teams that lose the play-in, so you know that you have a 12.5% chance at that first overall pick if you lose that series. You know that going in. Man, how does anyone who loves the Canadiens root for them to win that? Like, I just don't get the possibility of having an Alexis Lafreniere or the ninth pick in the draft, basically, would be the two options at that point. Or if it's not the first, it's the second pick or the third pick, whatever.
Yeah.
It becomes so hard for a fan to genuinely root for your team. I guess in a way you can look at it like, okay, well, either they win and they make the playoffs and that's good. And if they lose, well, then there's this, and this is good too. So either you look at it as a win-win, or if you're some fans who have been starving for a star player, you can look at it and be like, well, Canadians, just go out there and do your worst. Yeah. let's get that first overall pick.
Yeah, but it's just so unnatural to wish that the team that you cheer for loses. It goes against the grain, and honestly, the correct format, I don't know exactly what it would have been, what it should have been, but the correct format should not invite fans to think that way. It should have been a format that's conducive to say, you know what, I'm just going to cheer for my team, hope for the best, and because them winning even one round or two rounds or just doing any sort of run is better than not. And in the Canadiens' case, it's clearly not the case. They have to go either an early exit or, heck, they go all the way. And like I mentioned in my article this week on that topic, I compared it to the movie Major League when there's Jake Taylor, the veteran catcher. At some point, he stands up in the locker room. They just heard that they just heard from the manager that the owner of the team, Rachel Phelps, basically has wanted them to lose from day one. And he says, well, there's one thing left to do, and that's to win the whole bleeping thing. So I guess if the Canadians want to go that way, well, go ahead and try a Hollywood run. So.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, you know, I think, and particularly with this group, you know, remember at the beginning of last season, how many guys, Paul Byron in particular, but Gallagher, there were a bunch of guys who mentioned how everyone had spent the entire offseason writing them off and how everyone, didn't believe in them and how they've been labeled as this lottery team and they've used that to fuel the season that they had, a surprisingly successful season that just finished just outside the playoffs. Yes, they didn't make the playoffs, but they played really well for most of the season. And was in contention for the playoffs, legitimate contention until the very end of the season, when no one expected them to do that. So if that scenario were to come to pass, I could see the Canadians using that, to fuel them to victory in the play-in round. Like, oh yeah, you want us? And let's be clear, this would not only be the Canadians fans wanting their team to lose. I think Blackhawks fans would want their teams to lose. I think there are a lot of teams fans who would, if there was the number one overall pick was available, they would rather their team lose than win, which is, I think, the unintended consequence of the system the NHL came up with for the draft lottery. I understand the motivation for it, that the seven teams that are not playing should have something happen so that their fans can be excited about something. I get that. But this, you know, I think that is not worth this sort of weird environment where potentially you could have fans of their own teams rooting for their teams to lose. It just doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem like it doesn't capture the spirit of this whole thing that they're trying to do, which is to have this ultra competitive and perhaps the finest hockey tournament we've ever seen. Like, you know, 24 healthy teams going at it and not having to deal with the grind. Everyone associates the grind with the Stanley Cup. This would be a grind, but it would be a grind because every team is at its best. You know, every team is healthy, rested, and ready to go. And I think we might see some of the fastest hockey we've ever seen in the postseason. So it's just, you know, it takes away from that whole spirit is this one possibility. And I think the league has to hope that none of the play-in teams get any of the top three picks in that first lottery, because otherwise it's going to taint the whole thing.
Yeah,
it really will.
And I don't think that there was any point really in waiting in splitting that lottery in two and doing one on June 26th, the first draw for the lottery. I mean, they could have easily waited until the end of the play-in and have those results and have their lottery there. It's just that they wanted to have something from those seven teams that are out to chew on for a few weeks. But this is short-lived. I think that it's a lot of it's a lot of unnecessary twisting and turning and messing up with the usual structure of your league, only to, you know, give a lolly to certain fan bases that might or might not get really excited by Jamie Drysdale or Alexander Holtz, and thinking about those players for weeks until draft really happens. So,
well, I think I made the point in one of my articles, you know, Jamie Drysdale is not Tua. Like, there's no Tua Tagovailoa. There's no hockey fans are not as attached to junior hockey play. Generally speaking, there are lots of fans who follow prospects, very closely. But it does not compare to college football or college basketball in the States as far as buzzworthiness. So if you have the third overall pick, it's great. But yeah, I agree with you that, you know, I don't know how many hockey fans in Los Angeles have, you know, even know who Jamie Drysdale plays for. It's really, or even know who he is. So
there's not going to be a Tim Stützle mania in LA in the middle of summer.
No, they're not. Or Anaheim or San Jose. Well, San Jose for sure not, because they don't have their pick. But I mean, it's, you know, but I think in certain fan bases, Buffalo, Ottawa, you know, some of the teams that are involved here, legitimately, they would get excited. Absolutely. But it's just not worth the cost. It just doesn't seem like a good trade-off to excite those fan bases, which is a noble thing to want to do, but to do it at the expense of the integrity of your own concocted play-in tournament, doesn't seem right to me.
No, but I just going back to the point that you made, about the fact that the Canadians would be, you know, would be motivated and fueled by the fact that nobody believes in them. I think that it's a really great point. But ultimately, I think that those playoffs will be determined not by the best team, but that the team that's best prepared. I think that the aspect of preparation, the strategy behind how we attack that sort of playoff format with healthy guys to begin with, but there's going to be injuries because, you know, you start from scratch. There's not, guys are not heated up or anything. And, I expect more injuries than at the usual pace of the regular season, cause they're going to go full throttle 100% on every shift also. So, but taking those matters into all those matters in consideration, I think that it's really the teams that will be best prepared for that type of tournament that will end up winning the cup, and not necessarily what should be quote unquote the best team.
Okay, everyone, just like to take a little time out here to talk to you a little bit about Hawthorne and more generally Cologne, but specifically Hawthorne Cologne. So I was never really a Cologne guy myself until one day my wife bought me a bottle of cologne, which I took for what it was, which was seemingly a message. Like, here's this nice bottle of cologne. Why don't you try wearing it on occasion? And so I did. You know, I took the message and started wearing cologne on occasion and really, you know, started taking it on the road with me when I was covering the Canadiens and wearing it on the road. And I just found, well, for one, I think my wife noticed it every time it was on, sort of made a nice little comment, so it helped that way. And I just found generally when I was out, like, you know, no one would flat out say, wow, you smell great, but you just kind of notice these sort of nonverbal hints that people are noticing that you smell good all of a sudden. So smelling good is important. That's, I guess, the message here. And Hawthorne helps you smell good. So let me tell you about Hawthorne.co, especially with Father's Day coming up and you might be looking for a gift for Dad. This could be a good way to do it. So at Hawthorne.co, they have this really cool system where they do a quiz and they ask you, like, I don't know, it's about 20 questions or so, and it's just about your habits, I guess your grooming habits in a way. Doesn't take that long, but what they do is, based on all your answers, based on your skin type and your bathing habits and all sorts of other things that they ask you, they come up with a package of things, of colognes or fragrances that might be right for you. So it's really quick, it's really easy, and it's risk-free. There's free shipping, free returns, when you go to Hawthorne. So check out Hawthorne at Hawthorne.co. That's Hawthorne with an E at the end, and .co, not .com, Hawthorne.co, and use our promo code, which is ATHLETIC, simply ATHLETIC, to get 10% off your first purchase. So that's Hawthorne.co. Use our promo code ATHLETIC to get 10% off your first purchase. Hawthorne.co. Let's talk about the matchup with Pittsburgh for a bit. You know, I find it a very interesting matchup only because of the possibilities of just seeing how players react in this. Two players in particular to me are Max Domi and Nick Suzuki. First of all, how will those two players be used? We can pretty much guarantee that Philip Deneau and his line will be deployed against whatever line Sidney Crosby is on, perhaps with Jake Gensel on his left side, probably, it sounds like, based on what Jim Rutherford has said, with Jake Gensel on his wing. I think that's a pretty much a given. Now, who faces Malkin? Who would you put up against Malkin, Nick Suzuki or Max Domi, assuming they're playing on different lines?
Yeah, I think they're going to play on different lines. They're going to both play center because there's no Jesperi Kotkaniemi on that team. So, plus you have the fact of having Jonathan Drouin back makes it so that for once you can hope to create offensive threat on three lines. So the Canadians not having a lot of star power up front, at least they can pretend when they're healthy to have some depth and you know, roll all their lines and grind other teams down by coming after them one shift after the other. So separate lines. Honestly, I think that Nick Suzuki will have the biggest assignment of his career because he's the one who's the best geared to face a guy like Malkin, better than Domi, unless they decide to pair Domi's with a couple of wingers that are very, very sound defensively and say, well, we'll have more likely have a guy like Lehkonen who find a way to match him up against the center. But usually, in hockey, you'll have a center against the center and a winger against a winger. So it'll be a hard task to do because if you want to shut down a guy in particular, you cannot work your zone defense like the Canadians do, where basically the first guy back goes deep in the defensive end, and it more likely than not, when it comes to Max Domi, it's going to be one of his wingers instead of him. But if your focus is to defend against a star player, well, that doesn't really work. So that's why I think that I think Suzuki is much better equipped to try to neutralize a guy like Malkin and try to be able to generate some offense despite that on his line as well.
See, I don't disagree with you at all. But I do not see Claude Julien doing that. Do you?
Yeah.
Like, I agree. He should do that. But I do not see Claude Julien going to a rookie and saying, I'm going to put you against one of the best players in NHL history. And you're going to face this guy. I just don't see a scenario under which I could see him putting Domi with Lehkonen and Armia, as you said, and have Suzuki play with Drouin and someone on the right side of the third line. Maybe a Jordan Wheel, or I don't really know who would play there, but have that be sort of a more like, let's let them dominate the other third line, I believe centered by Jared McCann, and say, okay, why don't you go out and produce against them? And we're going to see what Domi's made of, by putting him in this situation with two defensively responsible wingers. But let's see if that fiery guy can get under this guy's skin and get him off his game. Because honestly, it might not actually be a bad strategy in that sense. Like Max Domi in a playoff situation, I feel would be a real asset in the sense that he would get annoying as hell by game three.
Yeah.
by game three, whoever's matched up on Domi will be sick of Domi. And so, you know, if Claude could sit him down and be like, listen, we're going to need you to make certain adjustments to how you play in your own end, how you play without the puck, and show him examples of things he should not do and say, but really what we want you to do is get in number 71's head and get him off his game and see if that's possible. See if that works. Cause, and frankly, if he's able to do it and if the Dano line seems to be struggling against the Crosby line, you could even switch it up at some point and say, okay, well, let's see what Domi does against Sid, because, you know, Sid has matured, but as we realized writing our 2010 look back feature, if you have a guy who gets under his skin, it could throw him off his game and it could really help your team's chances of winning.
Yeah. Well, there are two points, in what you said that, really, I want to emphasize. The first is that you say using Domi to, get the opponent off his game. In theory, it works, but the problem is that what I've seen from Max Domi since he arrived in Montreal is that when he tried to do that, he was the one putting himself out of his game instead of the opponent. He would be the one losing his concentration trying to do, you know, shenanigans that ended up hampering his own team rather than the other team. If he can manage to keep that, in rightly aligned and have the focus on getting the opponent off his game, and he succeeds in doing that, then that's great because he's got the potential to do that. But I call it lack of maturity, call it lack of focus, I don't know. But so far, too often there's been cases where it seemed like it was his aim to do that, but he ended up being the one that was taken off his game. So that's
right.
That's,
let me just say one thing about that, because I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you that almost every case we've seen him do that in 2 years, it has been more of a negative effect on him than his opponent. Totally 100% agreed. But I think every time we've seen it, it's been based on in-game emotion, something that happened within the game. In the playoffs, it is a tactic. It is a strategic, tactical thing to do. Like it's more cold-headed, if you will. Now, we don't know if he's able to do it with a cold head. We don't know if he's able to do it tactically because he's never played a playoff game. But I feel like if it was communicated to him in a proper way and it was communicated to him how important it would be that he stay within himself and that he do this tactically and not emotionally, and how vital that would be for the Canadiens' chances of winning, I just feel like that guy would grasp that and be able to execute it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we don't know because he's never done it before and we've never seen him in the playoffs before.
Right. But I mean, he needs a cool head for that. And if his temper boils up on January the 10th, what is it going to be when you're in game four of a series in playoffs, you know? So if he's able to do that.
It's the heightened importance of it that could lead him to be, I think it's exactly the relative unimportance of a game in January that maybe in his head he says, okay, well, you know what? I'm so angry. I'm just gonna let loose on this guy. It's not that big of a deal. It's just a regular season game. I just hope that the importance of a playoff game would prevent that from happening.
Well, if Claude Giner decides to go that way, I think that it definitely has to be a part of the game plan. It's something that he will have to try because that's one of the cards in Domi's game. And if he succeeds in doing that, it could be a turning point in his career. It could be really extremely significant for what will follow because it will bring another dimension to the player he is, because now he would show what sort of player he can be in the playoffs, which is an environment he hasn't known. But my second point was, speaking of Julien, I think you brought up a good point saying that Julien is unlikely to turn to a rookie and say, here's a matchup against Evgeny Malkin. But I think that's where it goes back to what I said about preparation. In my view, Claude Julien should not consider Nick Suzuki a rookie. After such a long layoff, he should have the mentality of saying he's a second-year guy from this point on. Mm-hmm. Because there's been so much time off, so much time to reflect on what he's done right and wrong, the ability to recuperate, to work on some things. I think he's such a smart kid. He already has drawn all the conclusions needed about what happened during the 71 games of the regular season. So the right approach in my mind would be to say, to empower him by saying, now you're a second year pro. And that's what I expect from a guy who's not a rookie anymore.
I agree.
That's the way I would go about it. I don't know if Julien will decide to see that way, but I think it's an opportunity. And since he's going to be a key player for this team for many years to come, I think it should be the right approach to empower him as soon as possible.
I agree completely. It's just that we both know Claude Julien, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you see Claude Julien? Maybe he will. I don't know. Maybe I'm not giving him enough credit, but he has so many preconceived notions of rookies and their limits, and all that. Like they're deeply rooted in his brain. Like these are things that he firmly believes. And it's just, I just don't see him, at least to start the series. I find it hard to believe that he would not shelter Nick Suzuki to a certain extent just to see what he does in that environment. And then maybe if Suzuki can play his way into a more important role, that might happen. But I agree with you. Listen, I would go to Suzuki and say, this is a challenge of your life, kid. Let's see what you got. And I think he would respond to it, but again, I hopefully, maybe Claude will prove me wrong. Maybe he will do that, but I just don't see him doing it.
It's such an uncharted territory that even guys that have their own beliefs so firmly entrenched into their philosophy and the way that they do things, this is the sort of the circumstances that forces you to reevaluate certain things, consider the opportunity that's at hand, and I mean, it's the first time in the league's history that they will have had a stop of almost 4 months before resuming the same season. So that's why I think that it's a good opportunity for Julien, even though I know perfectly what's his usual mindset is, to take those new circumstances and maybe approach it a different way.
So I think the most unique aspect of this series is it is going to be the most overanalyzed postseason series in the history of the game. So we are talking about it today.
Yeah.
It is at least 2 months away, if not more, 2.5 months away, maybe. So we will have plenty of time to break down this series. So I think we will leave it at that for now. We will touch on it over and over again over the coming weeks on this podcast and on The Athletic. But we will leave it at that for this week. Wishing everyone, the next time we speak to you, we'll be in French on Le Sport Athletique. It will be June at that point. We will be roughly 3 weeks removed from, or actually exactly 3 weeks removed from the NHL draft lottery at that point. Or it'll be in 3 weeks. So just a reminder that we will continue writing about all the ins and outs of this return to play formula and other things going on in and around the Canadiens and Montreal. So I encourage anyone who has not subscribed to The Athletic to go to theathletic.com/athletic support, theathletic.com/athletic support to get 40% off your first year's subscription. theathletic.com/athletic support. Marc-Antoine, it was good talking to you. I hope to see you soon.
Yes.
And I hope you're well.
Yeah. You too, man. Thanks a lot, everybody, for listening, and we'll catch up again. Bye-bye.